everybody, and welcome to a new episode of The Cusp Show, the Columbia University sports podcast, where we talk about the business of sports. And I do it with Joe Favorito, who's been going solo like the last month, right, Joe? Three or four episodes without me?
I was really starting to feel alone. And then, of course, we had Tom Cerny joined us, and anybody who listened to the Marcellus Wiley podcast heard Tom for about 15 seconds.
Okay.
So, but it was good. It was nice to have Tom.
I'll officially go down at his debut as a podcaster.
So we're looking for other Toms, by the way, going forward. And then other Joes will come in as well, too.
Yes.
Joe Biden's going to do one for us. So who do we get?
Joe Sixpack, maybe, at some point. Yeah. Get his perspective. But, yeah, so sorry I've missed the last few. It's been a busy stretch business-wise for the day job. But really happy to be back for today's episode with a guest, an industry friend, and a friend who we've been wanting to have on the show for a while, but it's been tricky because this individual lives in Chicago.
And we're in New York.
In New York, but today he's in New York City. So welcome to New York City, Jay.
Thanks.
And we're talking about a guy named Jay Sharman, who is the founder and CEO of Teamworks Media, which is a content marketing agency. Just kind of a loaded expression now that I say that, content marketing agency. You can explain that, what it means to everybody. But welcome to New York and welcome to Columbia.
Thanks for having me, guys. It's awesome to be here.
It'll be a lot of fun.
We'll do lots to cover. So Jay's got an illustrious background as a sports industry guy and a networker and as an entrepreneur. And he'll talk about Teamworks Media. But let's get to know you a little bit, as we always like to start our shows with a little kind of get to know you segment.
Sure.
So what's the Jay Sharman story?
Oof. Sharman story. I'll try to make this one quick. I'm a Rhode Islander. Grew up in Rhode Island, Smithfield, Rhode Island, which is infamously known. That's right.
Home of
the Patriots training camp for many years was our signature.
Oh, yeah. Beat Fordham last week.
Yeah.
Sucks. Different story.
So went to Northwestern. Studied radio, TV, film out there, and that
beat
was
Rutgers last week.
Barely, yes, that was not so.
That
great.
Also sucks.
But, did you know you wanted to study broadcast stuff? Like it was
no,
was,
you know, it was
that's
more,
an unusual major for a lot of young people. They don't really know about it, and they don't necessarily go to college for it.
Yeah, it was. My sister went to Newhouse,
okay,
up at Syracuse, and I was intrigued by it. But I remember being a high school senior and had done all the, you know, all the things to get you into the good colleges and the good grades. And I just was really drawn to media. And I was like, you know, at that point I said, I made a theory, which is probably some BS rationalization, which is if you do what you love, you'll probably do pretty well at it. And that was the big leap to go against the grain and go and do media.
Pretty mature thought for a 17 or 18 year old.
But I mean, I took a lot of crap at Northwestern. I mean, I can't tell you the amount of times people, pre-med guys being, you know, what are your parents, you know, paying for you to fool around in college and that kind of stuff. Right. So
the answer is yes.
Yeah. So, I guess,
were you drawn to Northwestern because of their reputation with us?
And a great football team at that time.
Yeah, definitely not the football team at that time. I was drawn to it for a number of reasons. One, I really liked the location, like Midwest. I grew up in New England the whole time. And the more I looked into it, this is pre-internet, right? I'd never even heard of it. And I was a sports guy. I was like, wait a minute, Big Ten, counting the 10 teams. Yeah. They actually are in the Big Ten. And so that was a draw, kind of the big-time athletics, even though they were not good at them. But they had so many opportunities, right? I mean, as a freshman, I was calling a game courtside on the radio station for with the Fab Five at Chrysler Arena, right?
Wow.
I mean, like, so there was, like, cool opportunities there and was drawn to it for a whole host of reasons. Beautiful campus, new part of the country. And, you know, I told my friends, if I'm 25 and I'm not back in the Boston area, come get me back. And here I am, 45, three kids, and I'm there. So,
wow. All right, cool. So you cut your teeth on production work during your undergraduate years. And afterwards, you went immediately to Fox.
Yeah, I went to, it was at the time, Sports Channel. It was owned by Dolan Cablevision and then turned to Fox Sportsnet.
Right.
And I got out of there, started the business in the late 90s. I did a documentary film. So I quit my job to do a documentary film on the number one ranked DePaul Blue Demons at the time, in the 99-2000 season.
So wait, you just kind of gloss over the phrase, I quit my job. Let's go back to that.
Yeah.
Obviously, you're a young guy trying to build a career.
Sure.
What prompted the quitting of the job, which is an unusual thing to do at that age?
Yeah, I was a television producer, so I was producing features for nightly sports programming. I was doing Bulls, Blackhawks, Cubs pregame and postgame shows in the studio. And I knew that's a burnout job for me. And I just, there was a promotion coming, and it was one of those, if I get it,
You'll be sucked deeper in.
I'm not going to be, there was another guy going for it. I'm like, this is going to be miserable. If I get it, he's going to be miserable. And if I don't get it, you know, then I'm going to be miserable, quite candidly. But at the same time, I'd always wanted to, I had the itch to do a documentary film. This was right when reality TV was kind of coming in vogue, and it hadn't quite hit sports yet. And so it was one
like
of
like Survivor and stuff like that.
So the sports reality doc was not a thing, and I wanted to do that, and we ended up doing that. And while we're, I had no money, so I went into my boss and I said, okay, here's the deal. I'm going to make your job easy. You can promote the other guy, right? But I need you to freelance me a couple days a week, right? Okay. And he's like, sure.
Who's your boss?
A guy named Dan Lafferty at the time. Jim Cornell was the guy who ran ran the network. And this is, you know, business lesson 101 I learned. So I get my first freelance paycheck, and I'm
wondering. You know what? That was a savvy move. Yeah. Good for you.
He went for it.
Good Northwestern education.
Yeah.
That's why.
Right.
Well, yeah, but I'm not that smart, because then I get my first freelance check. And the take-home net was greater than my actual full-time salary job. I'm working half as much and actually making more money. I was like,
welcome
what
to the world
doing?
Of consulting, Jack.
Yes. I was like, what an idiot.
So, what's FICA? Who's his FICA guy?
Who's the FICA guy? Yeah. But so the funny thing is,
and then you discovered the joy of doing estimated taxes, I guess.
Well, and we financed this documentary, like two idiots, a deal with a guy named Kevin Krebs. We put our credit card down and went out and bought cameras, and we'll figure it out. We'll sell it, you know, and doing side hustle jobs to pay for it. So we literally went to every road game, and we drove to everyone except for UCLA and Puerto Rico for couple obvious
So that
reasons.
Was Ray Meyer still or Joey Meyer at that?
No, it was Pat Kennedy. It was Quentin Richardson and, you know, that
Rod
whole
Strickland?
Team. No, Bobby Simmons.
Bobby Simmons.
Stephen Hunter.
So I worked with Pat Kennedy at Iona College.
There you go. So I really wanted to become a college basketball coach, and this was kind of like my side. I'm going to get in and see what it's like. And about 3 months in, I'm like, there's no way in hell I want to be a basketball coach.
No.
So did the documentary film, and we conceived Teamworks Media on those long drives with my business partner. And the general principle of the business back in 1999 turned out to be right. We were just way wrong in the time.
Is that really?
Right?
Considering there was no streaming video at the time.
No! I mean, people weren't even willing to put their, you know, credit card.
Right.
Buy something online? I'm not giving my credit card, right? Watch, what's this YouTube thing?
Right.
Who's going to watch videos
Which
on the
didn't
computer?
Didn't exist in 99, right.
Right. So the whole premise that we developed was, when I was at Fox, we'd see these projects come in because clients like the Chicago Bulls or DePaul didn't know where to go, and they needed content done. And so they would call Fox Sportsnet, and it would get shuffled down to some production assistant, or like, well, there's
content, just to be clear, for the new world of digital.
No, at the time, content,
or just
period.
Television,
like,
as well.
Chicago Bulls want to create a highlight film for their season ticket holders.
So that's an interesting point. It was at a time when leagues and teams were actually exploring opportunities as direct media businesses, which was a new concept.
Really,
right?
early stage stuff.
The early stage NFL Network, NBA Network,
Yeah, I would say, so then it was probably NFL Films, NBA Entertainment.
Yep.
NHL.
Right, but the networks hadn't been launched yet.
Right.
And the digital businesses were fledgling.
Yes.
Right.
But the production companies were NBA Entertainment and Secaucus.
Well, exactly. So there were they started as production for television, primarily, and then moved into digital.
Yep. Right. And so that was part of it. And we said, people are going to consume content, and there's going to be new technology, and we want to create a place that's turnkey, one-stop shop for, you want content made and disseminated across all these different technology platforms,
visionary.
We're your guys.
I was visionary.
And guess what happened? No one gave a crap. We became the, you know, and we had some early success.
But you were a visionary.
Yeah.
It seemed like a good idea at the time.
It seemed like a good idea at the time. Yeah.
Now in retrospect.
So we took a production company, a PR company, and a website design development company, and mashed it up into a blender. And that was the business part.
So was Tom Smithberg with you at that point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So Tom and I knew each other when Tom was the assistant PR guy for the Bulls.
Oh.
And he's Jay's partner.
He had the best job of any guy in the 1990s.
Because that was Michael Jordan.
Yeah, he was the gatekeeper to Michael Jordan in the 90s era Bulls. That was his job. He was in charge of media for that. So I was on the other side begging him for Jordan interviews. He went to Northwestern, too. He didn't quite care about that card when I tried to get my Jordan interviews. Just take a number.
That's great.
So that
took a lot of nerve to do that.
Not really. People say that. I mean, I was making $30,000 at Fox Sportsnet or whatever I was making. I was single. You know, I was a bachelor living in Chicago. I mean, it didn't... I could go get a job.
Yeah,
I didn't have any mortgage, kids, or you know, things like
but
that.
But still, I mean, about, so. As you know, it does take a certain level of energy and ambition chutzpah. And chutzpah to go for something on your own yeah. when you have good credentials where you could have gotten any kind of corporate job probably you wanted in the media. So.
I call it blissful naivete.
Well, yeah, which you have to have as an
yeah,
entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, so tell us how it evolved.
So, you know, the first, I think it's a great entrepreneurial lesson. We had some early successes, which made us think that we were onto something and that we knew what we were doing, and we didn't at all. Like, early success can be a downfall. And by that, I mean ESPN in year one, we became the Midwest Bureau. Like, within 12 months of opening our doors.
Wow.
Same thing for NBA Entertainment, right? And, ego starts getting a little, we know what we're doing, look at
them.
They all they wanted was content, produce video content for, you know, do live, you know, it was like the This Is Sports Center commercial was our office, because we would do, if you ever saw like those double boxes on Sports Center, it's at Chicago, it was in our office. Mm-hmm. So you'd literally walk in and there's Mike Ditka or, you know, Scottie Pippen or Desmond Howard and walking around the office. And so we built these, I called them silos, with all these production clients, all these PR clients, all these web design clients, but none of them cared about the integration.
Right.
And it wasn't until we did a deal in like 2005 where we finally was with Procter & Gamble and Fox Sports where we did our first true, you know, went out and did these production things on site at college football games and did web sweepstakes and, you know, all that type of stuff. And so it wasn't candidly until about 2011, 2012 where I would say integration of content mm-hmm. really started taking hold.
Right.
We were lucky enough.
Well, the notion of a content agency, which
yeah.
is a phrase we weren't using
correct.
15 years ago.
Yeah.
Right? So that's
so that was, it was an evolution.
And what was your business model in the beginning and how did that evolve? Were these one-off projects you could hire for production job
yeah, it was
and,
work
just,
for,
and just play the margins?
Yeah, it was all work for hire,
yeah.
project-based business.
Yeah.
And, you know,
but there were a lot of projects though.
Yeah, and we had multi-year deals and, I mean, I think the thing where I'm most proud of is we were the marketing partner for the Big Ten Conference and have been
right.
since like 2002.
Wow. Okay.
Big Ten Network, we've been working with them since the day they launched.
Yeah.
Chicago Marathon, we've had for since we opened the door. So we have a lot of long standing
like legacy clients,
projects, and
clients.
Yeah.
Can I ask if retainer based?
Some
yeah.
are multi year contracts
okay.
that just get renewed.
Yeah, right.
right?
Okay.
Which, frankly, I mean, and Tom, you know this too, that's kind of the key if you're going to work on your own. We know a lot of people who say, okay, I'm going to throw myself in one project and it ends and I'm sitting there staring at the walls trying to figure out what I'm going to do next. And that's not
the
way.
It's
the
number one problem for independent
works.
Operators.
Yeah. Right?
Yeah. They're just not keeping an eye out for
yeah.
the next
float.
Thing.
Not enough float.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so you want to have those consistent revenue streams. Right.
Right?
And then
I would call them the anchors. You
yeah,
know, to have a couple of good ones
yep.
that you can count on and then work on the margin on top of that. And if you can keep that cycle running, you know, suddenly it's 10 years later.
Yeah.
So where am
I? I'd say one of the seminal moments, though, kind of to go to work, was with Mark Silverman, who's now the president of
sure.
Fox Sports. And he was awesome. He's been great. And I'm forgetting the year. Let's call it.
So he was at the Big Ten Network.
He was at the Big Ten Network at the time. And he was there from day one. And we, as part of the contract that the Big Ten Network signed with each of the 14 schools, part of the deal was they have to promote the non-athletic side of
mm-hmm.
each of the institutions.
Like those commercials you see during
yeah, but it was
national,
even deeper than
national
that.
Football
yeah.
games where they'll say, you know, University of Southern California is a premier research institution, one of those?
Yeah, well, more. It was
okay.
the original vision in the contract was that, I forget the hours, but it was something like each school is going to get 60 hours per year to supply program that the Big Ten Network would run.
I see.
So
okay.
ballet from Nebraska or whatever you wanted, nanotechnology
right.
from Michigan,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And so that was one of the challenges. You know, Mark came to us and said, look, this is a lot of content that's not necessarily a fit for what we're trying to do. And so we started with some TV shows to try to solve the problem. And then probably one of the gutsier things that I've done, because they were paying us, we're making money, it would have been easy to just keep doing what we were doing. And we said, well, are you open to a kind of an out-of-the-box idea? And he's like, sure. And so we created a digital media brand, which still exists today, called Live Big, kind of a play on the B1G.
Wow.
And what we did is instead of doing TV shows that aren't going to get ratings.
This Week in Philosophy went away.
Right, right. Yes, exactly.
Or the ballet thing didn't
yeah,
work.
Yeah, exactly. So what we did is we said, okay, let's take your live telecasts and create vignettes that run in them. Mm-hmm. Then digitally, let's create original content on a daily basis. We'll write articles, we'll distribute it on BTN.com, blah, blah, blah. We'll run your social media channels. And so we created a digital brand embedded within the network. And that was, in retrospect, a pretty big break for us, because what it did is it gave us a really big head start on digital publishing and content marketing. I was going to
say short-form video and cross-platform.
Yeah. That was a huge deal.
And sponsorable things, I would imagine, which they could go back and sell.
Yeah. It's an asset that they own. And it's a really important thing for each of the school presidents, because now if you watch a Michigan State-Penn State game on the Big Ten Network, you're seeing quite a bit of content about things that really matter to those institutions that are being seen by millions of people, right? So
what would be an example, modern-day example?
Oh, God. We've done thousands of stories. So let's see.
Anything from this football season, for example?
Yeah, I just saw the new ones are going up. Some new ones are going up this week. Like I saw Northwestern just developed some new adaptation to the wheelchair, that a product that they developed that helps rehabilitation. There's some cool innovation things going on in farming that are being transferred to third world countries by folks at Maryland. I mean, there's a whole host of these.
Notice
they're really cool
hasn't
stories.
Come up in the conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. Rutgers, one of my favorites though, is Rutgers. They have an awesome prof there who wears like this Hawaiian shirt, and he was turning plastics into bridges. He was just this is just randomly cool stories of people making the world a better place.
And you have the inside talent at TeamWorks. To tackle those kinds of non-sports projects?
Yeah, we find this. I mean, Joe, you teach this. Mm-hmm. Like, storytelling. It's the arc of a good story, the beginning of a good story. It's the same fundamentals.
Right.
Look, anything we do at TeamWorks, we're not going to be doing. There's the ESPNs and the thousands of Bleacher Reports of people who cover box scores and game analysis. We're in the storytelling business, and so we're kind of agnostic to the X's and O's part of it. It's like, how are you going to move people and engage people around a story?
Right. How much do you advise your clients on the distribution side? Because arguably, that's the harder part of the equation these days.
It is. It's probably the thing that we give ourselves the least credit for, and it's a hard thing, candidly, to monetize.
Right.
And we could talk about
it. You mean as an agency?
As an agency.
Unless you become like a media planning service or something.
Well, we're pretty good at it. Yeah. And not to toot our own horn, it's just because we've been, like this guy, like Joe here, you know everybody, right? It's relationship business, and
yeah, I know about that.
You know who to call, We'll talk about it in a minute, but that La Vida Baseball Company that we created with the Baseball Hall of Fame for the U.S. Latino baseball fan, like, it's one thing to make it and start producing the content. It's another thing to get a partnership with Major League Baseball and Bleacher Report, and then, which we have, and I'm working on dozens of others. Mm-hmm. And the world is so fragmented, and there's so many people to try to connect. Internally we call it sometimes, in some way, we're almost like the intel of how can we help other people shore up their
side?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you've got a gap over here we see on your baseball coverage to this audience.
So will you modulate your plan and recommendation on the distribution side based on the sophistication of the partner? So in other words, if they don't really know what to do, you can kind of step in and take it over for them. Whereas if you're dealing with a major player who's really good at distribution, you're going to lay off a little.
Yeah, or we'll use it as an advantage. Right. So the Big Ten had their own distribution system.
Right.
There was really no need to go outside of the system. It's like work within the ecosystem that they know. But to your point, most of the new business that we're getting on the digital publishing side are, I don't want to say unsophisticated, it's just, it's not their core business, right? And so, to your point, yes, we can get you in front of millions of baseball fans or millions of tennis fans or millions of golf fans a month. Do you really care how we do that, right? Like, some do, some don't, and we'll tell them what we're doing, but at the end of the day, the sausage making of calling up all the different media partners and talking to them about becoming distribution partners and what the nuances of those deals, which get very complex really quickly, we'll share it with them. But that's kind of, it answers they do want to know, most people would, if you're starting any digital media brand, well, how are people going to consume it? How can we ensure that they do it?
Right. So one of the themes we talk about as a framework for discussing media in my class, digital media, is the owned, earned, paid model. So, which everybody is kind of a variation of, they can call different things, but how do you handle that these days? Because arguably now there's never been a better chance to get earned, but it does take a lot of work. It's never been easier to do owned, but it takes some investment and effort. And there's a general sense that you don't need to spend, in terms of paid media, as much as you had to in the past.
I know
that's kind of a multi-layered question, but do you use that framework when you think about the new, like, you can talk about La Vida Baseball, I guess, at this point, too,
sure,
because maybe that's a good use case.
Sure. You know, the ESOP, right? Earned, shared, owned, paid, or how different people use it. I think it's a really good framework to talk about. The conversations we're having right now at Teamworks, I think the more that the world gets digitally interconnected, and I might be generationally biased on what I'm about to say, I'm really working on the human connection, which sounds counterintuitive, but humans are still making the relationship decisions, whether it's earned, getting somebody to write about you or talk about it and show your work that you do, and or it's shared,
right?
Just tagging somebody on social media, that's kind of like the table stakes. Build the relationship so that when you have something that you think Mike Greenberg might want to share or Michael Wilbon might want to share or whomever, that you know them well enough. It's the old, it's the new form of PR.
Right.
And those were very relationship heavy businesses. And so that's the thing. I think we've almost, as a industry, become too technological and click the email out and send this out and, you know, tag it and move on to the next thing, where I'm really being like, no, we have to, each story, each piece of content needs to be treated as its own asset. And this is where it gets complex. Right. So for La Vida Baseball, if we're doing a story on
Joey Cora or
Alex Cora, or Yasiel Puig, right? Sure, there's the Dodgers, or with Alex Cora right now, we're doing a ton with him. There's the Puerto Rican community, right? Who cares about him in Puerto Rico? A lot of people. What about stateside Puerto Rico, right? What media entities? Red Sox. Like, there's a labyrinth of probably 100 different people that would be worthy of sharing that content.
Right.
And that takes work. That's reaching out and calling.
Yeah.
That's really...
But it's also relationship business. And one
of
the things that Tom and I always talk about is the value of showing up and having those relationships.
In meeting with people and phone calls. And, you know, and you just don't know where it's going to go. And so, there's no magic bullet. But to your point, earned matters. Absolutely.
Right.
Sharing matters now more than ever. And I want to go back to that in a second. You and I talk about this all the time. I've watched the pendulum swing. 2 years ago, it was distributed content model, which is a fancy way for saying no one goes to websites, no one goes here. You have to get your content and get it in front of other people.
Right. Push it out.
Which meant, okay, ultimately, that's Facebook and Google in their sub-properties of Instagram and YouTube. Well, that's all fine and dandy until they're saying now you need to pay, right? And then you pay them, and then they move the goalpost every 5 yards, and they're in charge, and they, you know, 3 second views count, and these BS vanity metrics. And so I think I've seen a significant shift since January and February when Facebook made their algorithm change of this, and we're doing it too, which is owned. Owned is becoming much more valuable, but. And I just had this conversation with the head of I was at lunch with Jordan Heyman, who runs NBC's content studio, NBC Universal's content studio. And like you, he's one of those guys I go to like, hey, what are you hearing in the marketplace? I think the thing that I'm seeing, where I think it's going, is it's no longer about the big vanity metrics. You've got a million Facebook followers or this or that. It's how engaged your audience is. Are they tribal? Will they run through a wall for you? And it doesn't – I like using old school references. It's the golf channel. We call it the golf channel factor. Those golf channel gets terrible ratings if you look at it in the big picture. But guess what? The 37,000 people watching are extremely valuable, you know, CEOs with big pockets, right? So it's not about a CPM or a value of
it's about their passion.
And that collective efficiency. You could go try to get in front of a million people. You're not going to get 37,000 of that profile. And so I think that's that it's in each bucket. We do paid. We do shared. We do earned. We're focusing on owned.
The stat that blew me away, which you probably know, a few weeks ago when the Bayern Munich guys, our friends came to visit my class, and we were talking about social media distribution of content, was that at this point in Facebook's history, a typical organic posts, like a post that you do proprietarily, only reaches 6%, the average, 6% of your follower base. So if you have a few million fans as they do, it's not really that effective, to your point. So they're effectively making you pay to play to get that reach that used to be more accessible a few years ago. So that said, when you think about that pendulum swinging back to owned, define that now. Like, what does an owned agenda look like for you guys? And by the way, why don't you describe to everybody what LaVita Baseball is?
Because we haven't done that yet. Say, yeah, and that's the perfect segue into figuring out what this is.
Okay, so, sure. So back up and just describe that first, and then talk about like what your owned channels would be or your own products.
Okay, so LaVita Baseball is a U.S. Latino-focused digital media baseball company, right? Lifestyle stories, human interest storytelling on a daily basis. We have a website, multiple articles per day. We do original video. We have our own social channels. We have our own email newsletter. We do all the things that we just talked about.
English language.
English language. We are now doing video in dual language for a bunch of reasons. But, yeah, it's two-thirds of the U.S. population consumes sports media, the Latino, in English. So, okay. Which is a stat that I'm a white guy from Smithfield, Rhode Island. I had to go do all, when I saw the stats, I had to go talk to the top people in media and be like, am I reading this right? No, why are you guys, ESPN, why are you guys doing this in Spanish and not English? So I had all those conversations. But so it's a company. It's a joint venture with the Baseball Hall of Fame up in Cooperstown. We just saw there was a huge hole in the market. There was no one servicing that content. It was all translated Spanish content, right? Like Mike Trout, what he did on ESPN translated into Spanish, not the love fest for Alex Cora and what it means for Puerto Rico right now through a Puerto Rican's eyes, right? That sense of ownership. So what I mean by owned, to answer your question there. So,
but before you answer that, who had the idea to do this?
A guy on my staff actually did.
Okay.
Because he saw that they
and
had
then
been
you,
doing
it. So you, we cold someone called conceived
them.
Of it.
We cold called him.
The Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Wow, good for you.
Yeah, we cold called him. It's one of my great stories. It's the old anyone can come up. There's a guy on my staff.
The guy that I met at that event?
What's his name?
Tab. Tanford. Yeah. And we had a documentary film on a really cool story about kind of like the Latino game changer in baseball, a guy named Jorge Pascual. And then we saw that the Baseball Hall of Fame had been trying to do some posts and blogs and started and stopped to this audience. And so we just took a chance to call them and said, you guys trying to connect with this audience? They said, yeah. And we said, we've got some ideas for you. And they were, I give Jeff Idelson and his team a lot of credit. They're really open-minded to it.
Right.
And took a leap of faith, and we launched it in March 1 of 2017.
That's great.
So,
did they invest in it too?
Yeah, it's a, you know, yes,
say, but
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, can't go into details, but we're both, partners in the actual deal. So, which was important to us because they're a great base for a lot of different assets. Being out in the field, creating some brand, mutual branding was important to us so that people recognized LaVita was a new brand. Baseball Hall of Fame is a known brand, right? Mm-hmm. So bringing those two together was important to us. So
is the business model eventually to monetize it through sponsor support or
subscription? We're not reinventing the wheel here. There's about 13 different revenue streams. Number one is sponsorship and marketing partnerships, down to probably the smallest, which would be merchandise, right? And everything in between, licensing of content. We have a LaVita Baseball Content Studios.
Right.
So if you're not interested in sponsoring, we can create content. We do this for Major League Baseball sometimes. Or, the Atlanta Braves engaged us to help on a number of things, whether it's consulting with them on how to connect with the Latino baseball market or creating content
for them.
That
seems to be a good idea.
So there's a whole host of them. I mean, almost every digital publisher has the same revenue streams. Events is one we're looking at. It's just what's the percentage?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, marketing, it's an ad-supported model. It's a marketing partnership model.
Nice. Okay, so back to the owned properties.
I mean, I'd be curious to get your take on this. Owned, we look at pretty simply as website.
So just for everybody listening, LaVitaBaseball.com?
LaVitaBaseball.com.
Yeah, okay. Everybody can
email.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you're soliciting email addresses to build a list for email newsletters.
Yep, email newsletters. And those are the two owned channels.
Right.
I mean, we don't have an OTT platform. Right. Everything else that we have, I mean, we own the actual the assets that we create. But, you know, then we're relying on third-party partnerships, right, with Major Baseball and Bleacher Report and some other folks. And we have our own social media channels. We don't consider those owned because Facebook's more in control of those, right?
Yes.
So it's really website and newsletter are the key drivers of the owned relationship, you know, the direct-to-consumer.
No Alexa voice skills yet?
Not yet. I'm just kidding. Not yet.
I know when you hear about these properties, you and I have had this conversation where some of the big brands like ESPN and WWE are now developing products on over 20 platforms. It makes you realize how complicated things
it's
are.
It's really complicated.
So you're not there yet, but hopefully if it keeps growing, you'll get there. So in terms of the, I'm just curious about the mobile versus web, another conversation we've had, because obviously we're seeing a decline or a continuing shift to mobile-first consumption, especially for younger demographics.
Yep.
Are you seeing the same kinds of things?
Yeah.
And by the way, what is the demographic for La Vida Baseball?
You know, it's across, it tends to be, you know, 25 to 40, late 40s male dominant.
Okay.
Depending on the type of content, it can skew one way or the other, but that's kind of the core. Interesting, there's a lot of nuance with the Latino population that's different than other populations, right? And so it might be a generalization, but tend to have more respect for history, right? There's a much more familial connectivity in the Latino community. So like whenever we do Roberto Clemente content, it always does well, even for the younger generation, which is fascinating to me, right? Clemente, it's like we could do Clemente all day long. Right. So what was your other question, though?
Mobile versus...
Yeah, the mobile share.
Oh, it's huge. Huge. Mobile's 90%.
And that's that's just happening through a mobile website?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're distributed on Apple News. Right, so
touch on some of those partners because it's interesting. About people always ask about how do you get your content out there? How did Bleacher Report come along? How did the other places come along that are distributing your content?
Human relationships, just old school
reaching out and seeing
reaching out, emails, phone calls. Let's get on a horn and talk. Right, you know, this is where, if not for the first 10 years of TeamWorks, having done work with MLB Network and ESPNs and the others, that's where you built the relationships and people move around. And you know, one of our Jeff Eisenband, one of his buddies worked at Bleacher Report. He's like he connected
been a guest,
us, right? So just and that's the single biggest takeaway. It's I think some people get so caught up in their own idea or their own thing. Like you get into this self talk of like we are great, where it's really. It's not a meritocracy. It's like, okay, you have to have a ton of conversations with a lot of people to thread that needle.
Yeah,
we've probably talked to 100 different media partners.
Right. And you do you find yourself going back to the same well frequently? Like there are certain ones that are just more amenable to this kind of a relationship?
Well, I may be giving away...
You don't have to give away...
I may be giving
names,
away a little bit of secret sauce here, but...
In other words,
you know,
some from my experience, I think Joe probably the same experience, like... There are some media companies that think, like, thanks, but we're good. Like, we don't really need the help. Like, we can take care of this.
Yeah. Sometimes.
Okay.
Sometimes. I think you guys weigh in. I think in sports media, there's such an over-concentration of money into the actual live rights.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
That the supplemental rights around it, they don't have the budget.
Yeah.
If you're ESPN, you do, right? Okay, you're going to do, but you're going to do a studio show, right? Which is just talent. Same studio, put the lights on. Okay, we're going to talk about NFL 7 days a week. We've invested a lot of money. We're going to have, how many shows can we have that support that? The original content, the stuff that moves you, you know, like right now, Dan Cloris's film, everyone, even ESPN, has limited budgets on the original content that supports those investments.
Right.
And it's interesting to me because I think those are the things that actually become most share-worthy, right? Those are the emotional...
Yeah, and arguably that's where you're going to get your differentiation
in
the marketplace to actually change consumer behavior to say, there's a reason why Netflix and Amazon are doing a lot of original programming. That's the differentiator.
Yeah.
It's not rerunning old Seinfelds and stuff like that. It's the shows they're creating that you can't get anywhere else. So I agree with you. I think that's a really astute point. That for the properties, and these are typically the network digital businesses, that spend where their sister division, like their TV division, has spent so much on rights, they typically are not investing much in original digital programming because they have limited budgets.
Right. I mean, look.
I haven't studied that financially, but that's my suspicion too.
Yeah, I mean, looking from the outside in, like ESPN Plus, we were talking about that.
Right.
You look at the logos they've invested in the parent company, right? But they've got the French Open. What are they doing in January to support that investment from a content perspective on ESPN Plus?
Yeah.
Like, you look at the masthead, what are they doing on a year-round? Right. We believe that sports is tribal, and if you're into a whatever entity it is, there is a 365-day-a-year approach and niche. The niche within the niche is what we like to call it, and that's what we're focusing on, right?
Right.
Tons of people doing baseball, no one doing U.S. English-preferred Latino baseball,
right?
Like, what is that niche? I think this is my secret that I'll give out. I'm, my partners will probably kill me, but, you know, one of my owners, a fellow owners of the company, is a CFO. He comes from the investment banking background. He came into my office first 6 weeks on the job, didn't say a word. And he's a talkative guy.
How long has he been there?
For him, about a decade now.
Okay.
And at the time, we had all this work for hire business. And he's like, so let me get this straight. You're really known as the sports media guys. You create a lot of linear television product. And they know the budgets better than you do. And if you run everything, but they have editorial control. It was just going down the road. Like, and by the way, if you go to anyone not named ESPN, they know that ESPN turned you down, so you have no leverage, and no one else other than ESPN has budgets. That's a pretty crappy business model, right? And I was like, oh my God. You know, I hadn't thought through it. So I did a roadshow, maybe about soon thereafter, and I went to all of the ESPNs and the PBSs and the Discoveries and people who Fox Sports is and said, hey, look, don't ever call us again to commission work. We can't make money on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny. It was like I opened up this
right.
door to a new guy. They were like, oh, they were bragging about deals that they got because there's just so much supply of content.
Right.
People wanted it out there. What I did say, though, is I said, look, if I want to have the right to be out there, and if I'm talking to somebody, you know us, can we bring content to you at no cost to you that you'll run? Right? Barter deals is what they call them, right? And they were like, no risk, high quality content, no out of pocket, call us anytime. And so that's kind of our approach on a lot of our stuff, is reaching out to people, and they're conditioned to answer the phone before you even say anything. Say, we have no money to spend on content, right? Like, you can't, oh, I was calling to ask how your mom's doing.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, you know. But I think that's part of this is, okay, you don't want to spend money. Run our content to your audience that we're creating.
Right,
and help
you
us.
Share on the revenue.
Yeah,
that
a lot of different models. You can share on the revenue. We could sell it direct. They can sell it and share with us. So there's a lot of those types of deals.
Yeah, no, that's good stuff. Well, congratulations on creating what sounds like a great business.
And before we get off that, you have other partnerships, right? Tennis Hall of Fame.
Tennis Hall
of
Fame. Golf Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. We've got quite the bucket list on the College Football Hall of Fame we're working with right now. Mm-hmm. So lots of sports museums. And
so there's a little bit of niche in this kind of museum Hall of Fame thing, huh?
Yeah, it's been a nice little, it's like everything else. It's relationship. They all know each other. They hear you're doing good work, and people start talking to one another. And we think museums are a great market to be in because they have such incredible assets.
Yeah.
And their mindsets tend to be, how do we get people through our front door?
Right.
It's the old business model. And as you guys know, it's like, well, how do we take your brand and the assets and put them in the laps of people globally, right? Flipping that, which sounds, for maybe people listening to this, common sense, but when you've been doing certain things 60, 70 years.
And a lot of old, traditional businesses are worried about cannibalization, which I think is crazy at this point in history. But, I could see, for example, famous museums around the world just doing, like, amazing subscription-based businesses.
Yeah.
I think it would be a big success if they did them right.
If they do them right.
But they're probably, many of them are probably scared to do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I've always wondered why, Joe and I have talked about this a couple of times throughout our relationship, why Broadway is not more aggressive with digital variations on it.
Because you look at who owns Broadway, and that's the problem.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So these legacy businesses.
They still can't believe the Village Voice went out of business 2 weeks ago.
Or that Times Square is cleaned up.
Anyway.
Yeah, all right. So we should move into the last segment of our
discussion.
We like to ask everybody a couple of important questions. First being, how do you keep up? How do you stay smart What are you reading? What are you following? What are you paying attention to on Twitter?
There's this guy, Tom Richardson, who has this awesome Twitter feed that I follow. I'm big on Twitter,
yeah.
Right? And I, and all kidding aside, YouTube, I rabbit hole. Like, if there's somebody, if I see you and I follow you and what you're doing, who are you following? And right. I kind of go down that road. So Twitter's
I do that, by the way, all the time. I say that to the students. Like, I always, for the people that I like, I look at who they follow, and then I'll kind of vet them, and I usually then will add a couple here, a couple there, or, you know, whatever. But that's a good little trick for people that are especially new to Twitter.
For sure.
I got a rotation. DigiDay?
Yes.
Is part of my morning staple.
You do the daily email,
I do Wall Street Journal CMO email.
Okay.
Where they kind of do a lot of curation.
Does that require a subscription or just the email?
You know, it's a good question. I've had it for so long, I'm not sure. Okay. But... They,
you can share the password later.
There we
Just log on and see if until they bump you off.
They do great curation, right? Yeah. So everything you want to know in one place on a
from
daily basis.
From that day's journal?
From other sources.
Oh, okay.
So from they'll go and they do the curation, which I love, right? Here's what's going on. Adweek, you know, TechCrunch, all that
thought
kind of
about
stuff.
That one, the CMO.
Yeah, it's at the CMO, the Wall Street Journal CMO email. Okay. That's one of my go-tos. Twitter and then LinkedIn. I love the LinkedIn news feature because...
Underrated, as I wrote about
that. I know, Joe wrote a nice piece about that last week.
It helps you keep completely connected with people in your network.
Yeah.
And it's like, if you post something or engage it, I watch what you guys do, and you guys are doing the work for me, so it's great.
And it was funny. I think we're doing the work, and that's one, another point I make often. It's like, we're doing the work for each other, which is one reason I like people that are more thoughtful with what they do.
Sorry to disappoint.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm not. It's a general rule for me, because... I don't want to be – I use it as an information source myself, a serious one. So I really try to have the discipline to keep it, as I like to call it, like a high-protein feed.
Yes.
You know, and when I see the sugar, snacks and the salty snacks coming through, as much as I might like them, it's like in the middle of the day especially, I really try to avoid what I'd call the Twitter clickbait, and there's a lot of it.
Yeah.
So I'm a big list fan on Twitter too. So when I need my politics fix, I go into my list.
Yep.
That saves me probably a bunch of time. Cool. All right. So
last question.
Yeah.
We have a lot of young people who listen to this, people switching jobs.
The question, their careers.
Yep. What do you tell people who either are on a career switch or looking to get involved in, whether it's a digital space, the media space, the sports, the entertainment space? Any kind of quick advice you always give people?
Yeah, think beyond the indemnity. Right. So if you're wanting to go in sports media, for example, you know, many people that I meet, I get a lot of career advice conversations like you guys do. Many people have a hard time thinking beyond team, league, sports media entity. Right. And I always do this thing where I say, follow the money, pick a sport. So if you're a college football fan and you want your dream job would be in sports media or on college football, follow the money. Think of an ESPN telecast, go through the first commercial break. Right. You've already covered all the things I just talked about, but what you're not thinking about is, okay, Home Depot, right? You'd never think as a college football fan, should I go work at a brand? Well, guess what? There's people at Home Depot that are college football experts because that's their audience. They manage agencies.
They're spending many millions of dollars.
There's event marketing. Yeah. Like, you start looking at the agency web of who's around a Home Depot or an Allstate, right? And Pam Holloman, those there are a lot of places to go for sports media, more so now than ever, that are outside the traditional. And so just I try to open up the mind to think about things like
that. And it overlaps with other categories in the business. So sports media, sports tech, which is a big category for job growth right now. The gambling stuff, obviously. Yeah,
huge.
Yeah, I mean, as I like to say, just get on the right trend line. That's the key thing. But anything else in terms of you've done a lot of hiring – for Teamworks over the years, I gather. What do you like in terms of outreach? Like, how do you like to be approached as a more senior executive who probably is sought after from time to time? What works?
Oh, man. I can tell you what doesn't work as much as
that's
works.
Fine.
That's even more important, probably.
I think the number one pet peeve, and I do this all, my wife and I talk about this, is that in the last 10 years, parents being the lead.
Ugh. I have four of them. I got four.
Oh, you mean they got intro through the parents?
No. I'll get an intro from the parent saying Jenny wants to talk to you and blah blah blah.
Four this week.
I respond and say, have Jenny contact me. Yeah. Here's my information.
Yep. Right.
And it's amazing how many people
and that just drops.
Just or the person will come back and then they send me the resume.
Right.
Right? I'm like, right. No.
Yep.
Right?
So that's so funny.
There's certain things like, to me, it's be different and be value driven, right? Like we're all the same. When we're 22, like you're having a conversation and the person, when they're approaching you, they're saying things like they're saying what you think they want to hear, as opposed to you and I know Dan Chanoff, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So Dan, I'll use Dan Chanoff. Be like Dan Chanoff.
Right.
Dan Chanoff. There's this little startup called Starwave.
Yeah.
ESPN.com. Right back in the day.
I met with him back in.
So late 90s, he writes a letter to Jeff Reese, and
then head of Starwave. Right?
Dan Hart, head of Starwave, right now head of Oath Sports, and it was, here's the issues that I see with your organization. Here's what I would recommend to do them. I'd love to sit down and talk to you about it. Now that's an extreme. It's pretty bold because you're pointing out. You know, right. But guess what? Week later, I'm coming to Chicago. I need to meet with you. Be mindful of who you're meeting with, and if you're actually, we know you want a job. If you're truly trying to network, like play by the rules of networking. If you're truly like, I love your company and I want to work here and I'm willing to do whatever it takes to do that, come to the table with some thought on how you can help someone's the business. Like, we're all so freaking busy. I don't have time to think about your career, right? I'm happy to network with you and give you some, but there's an element of like, if you want to make a difference, show me what you can do for us.
Yeah. That is so really good advice. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I think we have our version of too, which is like,
What do you say?
Have a point of view, like study the business, think about it and, you know, put it in the context of that person's challenges. And you don't necessarily have to pull a Dan Chanoff, and that doesn't surprise me, knowing Dan.
Yeah.
And by the way, I admire that a lot.
Yeah.
But I don't think most people could do that. But at least be prepared to engage. I was in touch recently with one of our students who had a funny connection, got a very senior level person in the business that they got a coffee with, and he called and asked for my advice, like how should I handle the coffee, and I said, look at everything the guy said publicly. He's a very high-profile guy. Look, watch the conferences he's been in, watch his speeches, look at his quotes. Think about the big issues that this company is facing. And you don't necessarily have to lead with it and show off. But when the moment strikes in the conversation, say, hey, I saw how at the conference last week you said this. I think that's really interesting. That relates to something that we were just studying at Columbia. Whatever.
Right.
It's something like a conversational gambit that helps helps you get into shop talk faster, because the more you can do shop talk in an interview, the better off you're going to be. But you have to be, if you're going to try to talk shop, you got to be ready to talk shop, meaning you need to know the issues and stuff.
Right? My preparedness has waned. I sound like the grumpy old man, but preparedness
you think
is
so? Like,
significantly. I flat out ask people questions about, I'll say stuff like, so tell me now that you've known about the company, tell me one thing that you think our website doesn't communicate.
You got a blank stare back.
50% of the time.
Wow.
Like, if you can't take the time to go on our website, on your iPhone, in the elevator, on the way up here even, like, how are you going to show up? And so
that's basic actually a good question.
And by the way, it's easy to do now because, like you said, as you're going up the elevator, you can pop it on your phone.
I mean, you could be,
go to their LinkedIn page.
Well, that's what I mean. Just be thoughtful about it. Be purposeful, right?
Make a connection.
The one I used to use in the early days of digital when people didn't have digital experience, but they were trying to get in, I would say, so, and I still do this when I have occasion to interview people or to vet people, is tell me something going on in the industry that you think is really provocative.
Mm-hmm.
And you can usually know within the first 10 seconds or less, maybe 5 seconds, whether they're actually paying attention. And if they really have nothing to add, or they say, gee, you know, I remember doing this in the late 90s and at NHL, and people would mention Amazon. It's like, well, Amazon launched like 6 years ago, and back then they were literally just doing commerce, which was fine. But and then I was like, that's not what I'm talking about. And then I was looking for like Starwave or something interesting, and I usually would know really quickly whether they were my cup of tea for what I wanted, which was people that were paying attention. You know, so
that's a great one.
Yeah,
I love that one.
Cool.
Wow, good stuff. Yep. Well, thank you, Jay Sharman.
Wait, more importantly, Jay, tell us where people can find you.
So now that we know that you're a Twitter
Media,
master.
Avita Baseball.
TeamWorksMedia.com.
And then the website. Twitter, you have an account for TeamWorks on Twitter?
We have a TeamWorks Media account, and then I'm underscore Jay
Sharman.
What
is it on Twitter? Just TeamWorks
Media? TeamWorks Media.
Okay, and then you're underscore?
Underscore Jay Sharman.
Underscore Jay Sharman.
Sharman.
Nice. And La Vida Baseball is La Vida Baseball on Twitter. Cool. Excellent. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, guys. This is fun.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy your time in New York.
Yes.
Good luck with Teamworks.
Thanks, guys. You too.
Joe, Tom, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Tom.
Good to be back.
Wrap it up.
So thanks, everybody, for listening. You've been listening to a conversation with Jay Sharman, the CEO and founder of Teamworks Media, content marketing agency. I hope you can, if you ever want to, anybody wants to talk to him, reach out. He's a very accessible, really nice guy. So feel free. And hopefully you enjoyed this conversation. You'll listen to the next one when we're back. Thanks.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.